This is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the program, we'll be talking about robots and the missing matter in the universe. But first, fix the Hubble or not? Send robots or astronauts to do the job? Or just don't do anything? These were some of the questions debated this week on Capitol Hill as experts presented options for extending the life of the famous space telescope, whose gyroscopes and batteries could fail as early as 2007 if repairs are not made. The formal report from a committee at the National Academies of Sciences was released in December. But even as scientists and space experts made the case for saving the Hubble, there is speculation that NASA's 2006 budget, set to be unveiled on Monday, won't earmark any money for a repair mission, only funds to decommission the telescope. Could Congress fund a repair mission if it thinks it should be done, even if NASA doesn't? Would NASA be satisfied with losing the jewel of its space program? Considering the Hubble's long list of accomplishments, it's an impressive resume, and the new discoveries in the offing if the service mission goes ahead. So what do you think? If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call. Our number 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Sandra Faber is a university professor of astronomy and astrophysics at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and an astronomer at the UC Observatory's LIC. She, along with some other scientists, diagnosed a famous flaw in the Hubble's optics, and she joins us today from San Jose. Welcome to the program, Dr. Faber.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Joseph Rothenberg is a former associate administrator for spaceflight at NASA, the former director of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. He was the project manager for the first service mission to the Hubble, and now he's president of Universal Space Network in Newport Beach, California. He joins us from Darnestown, Maryland. Welcome back to the program, Mr. Rothenberg.
Thank you.
You testified at the House Science Committee hearing this week on the options for the Hubble, and back in December you were on that National Academies Committee. What did you tell the Congress this week?
Basically, we told them three things. Number one, that it was important to service Hubble. It's been a productive scientific instrument, gave astronomers a window on the universe that no other orbiting telescope is currently doing, and that adding the new instruments would continue to increase the scientific power that had been done previously by the prior servicing missions. The second point we made is that the program, although they're making excellent progress in working towards a robotic mission, the declining state of Hubble's gyros and batteries, as well as the amount of time it's going to take them to complete the preparations for a robotic servicing mission, would make it highly unlikely that they'd be able to do that in time to actually save Hubble. And thirdly, in looking at the shuttle servicing as an alternative, as been done previously, and the risks relative to missions to the International Space Station, they felt that the risks, the marginal, very slight increase in risk of flying to Hubble with a shuttle and doing a repair mission, the benefit of repairing Hubble and the probability of repairing it successfully far outweighed this very small increase in risk.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Congress is receptive to these ideas?
They certainly listened. They asked the right questions and gathered information and appeared to be receptive, but we'll have to wait and see how it all comes out.
Mm-hmm. Sandy Faber, what was your take on it?
Well, I think that I'm actually troubled by a larger issue, even bigger than Hubble, mm-hmm. Because the reluctance to service Hubble is being accompanied by a general indication that maybe there'll be less money for science projects generally at NASA. So I think the Hubble controversy has to be seen in that larger context.
You mean the president wanting to go to the moon and to Mars will drain away the money?
Yeah, I think that's a big concern. Certainly among scientists it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with Joe. I think we've just started to talk about Hubble in the Congress, and they're listening very receptively, so we'll see what happens.
Do you think really it might be possible that the budget comes out next week and there's no money for Hubble in it, at least the request from NASA?
I don't think I'm the right person to comment on that. I hear rumors like everybody else, and those are the rumors.
Joe, what do you think?
Well, the same thing. I think we're just hearing rumors, and we'll have to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Why was it decided that the robotic mission was not practical?
It's not that it's not practical. It's the question of the technology needed to do it still needed to be matured. The team had a large integration job of putting together a number of disparate pieces they've never put together into a robotic spacecraft before, a robotic arm, a robotic dexterous manipulator to do the fine tuning, an acquisition system that allowed us to get up there, see Hubble, acquire it, grapple to it, close in on it, the proximity operations, the software needed to do that. In putting that all together, it's the time that they had when one looked at the potential 07 and 08 need for replacement of the gyros and then 08 for the batteries, and the time that they had versus the time it would take to get ready to do it just made it a large investment with a probability of a fairly high probability of not being able to get there in time to actually save Hubble.
Mm-hmm. I could add another thought to that. And that is that the wonderful thing about a manned mission, the committee thought, was how flexible it was. In the past, new components have been added to manned servicing as little as 3 months before launch of the shuttle. So if something were to fail unexpectedly on Hubble, there's a high probability that a fix could be included in the next manned mission. Whereas a robotic mission has to be more or less set in concrete sometime during the next year. And if something new and unexpected were to happen after that, then it could not be addressed by a robotic mission.
What do you say to some scientists who might say, well, you know, it may cost $1 billion to fix the Hubble. Why don't we just save that for the next telescope that's on the boards?
Well, Hubble is a spacecraft, a proven spacecraft that is up there and operating. Mm-hmm. And its role in space science was carefully studied by the Astronomy Decadal Survey, which is a survey that happens every 10 years when astronomers survey what's needed in their field. And in the last decadal survey, which came out in 2000, the Hubble servicing, this mission that we're discussing, was an integral part of that plan. Mm-hmm. And there were plenty of other spacecraft projects that were discussed and prioritized in the plan, but it was always assumed that this one would be done and therefore that it was worthy relative to all the other missions that might possibly be in the queue.
Well, and the Hubble has such a great track record. You know, it really is. I said it was the jewel. I think it really is the NASA's jewel now in terms of its of being the visible success that it is.
Well,
it's hard to believe that they would let it go.
Not only has it been successful, but the wonderful thing about the servicing mission is that it's going to install two new instruments, and each one of those is going to add amazing capabilities. That's something that everybody should understand. The Hubble that is up there now is not the same spacecraft that was launched in 1990 by a long shot. And these two, because we've successively installed new and more capable instruments, these two new instruments would add speed gains of between a factor of 10 and 50 in the ultraviolet and in the near-infrared. And, you know, astronomers kill for gains of a factor of 4. That's a telescope that's, you know, twice as big in diameter as some other telescope. Gains of a factor of 10 to 50 effectively open new horizons. It makes almost a new spacecraft in those spectral regions.
Go ahead, Joe.
Ira, I'd like to add something, and from a non-astronomer's viewpoint, having flown back and forth across the country numerous times, when you sit down next to somebody and tell them you work for NASA, 9 times out of 10 they don't talk about human spaceflight, the space shuttle, or exploration. They immediately jump, what do you think of those images from Hubble? And they don't have any idea, any relationship to Hubble. They just immediately, that's what the public sees. Yeah. That's what stimulates the imagination. That's my findings.
Considering that Sean O'Keefe is no longer going to be head of NASA, has not been a new administrator named. Do you think that NASA or the White House would wait until after we get a new administrator to decide some of these issues? Or do you think that decision will reflect the direction that the White House wants to go in?
Well, clearly the budget coming out next week will give some clue, and that's going to come out regardless of the administrator's departure. Following that up, what the White House might want to do or not do before a new administrator comes, might just be speculation. I don't think I could answer that.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure, Sandy, you're not going there either.
No, I have no idea.
Give us an idea. Just run down a little bit for us. Joe was talking about when people talk about the Hubble. I think this space. I think they do now talk about the Hubble. They may throw in the Mars rovers a little bit, you know, because of those great pictures.
Yeah, certainly.
Sandy, give us your top five great accomplishments that the Hubble has done.
All right. Well, gee, you know, I could name over a dozen, but I have five favorites here. The first is the ultra-deep images of the universe, which have unveiled the earliest moments of galaxy formation. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting point with large telescopes like Hubble. In looking out into space, you also look back in time. It's as though you handed a historian a magic telescope. When they look through it, they could actually see Hannibal crossing the Alps with all of those elephants. Mm-hmm. And we actually see the universe unfolding before our very eyes when we look out to large distances. So we've seen infant galaxies for the first time, thanks to Hubble. Mm-hmm. Another major discovery is massive, supermassive black holes at the centers of galaxies, which can weigh up to 3 billion solar masses. And these are the long-sought engines that are the energy sources of quasars, which are the most brilliant luminous objects in the universe.
Give me one more.
Okay, one more. Dark energy.
Ah.
All right.
My favorite.
Yes, that's your favorite.
That's my favorite.
Okay.
Because we don't know what it is, right?
No. In terms of fundamental physics discoveries, this has been called by some the most important discovery since quantum mechanics at the beginning of the 20th century. So the basic discovery is that the universe expansion is speeding up instead of slowing down.
So it's discovered dark energy. Yeah.
And this implies the existence of some unforeseen and completely new form of energy that is completely outside our ken and has not so far been interpreted by the physicists.
All right.
A fundamental discovery.
Sandy Faber, Joe Rothenberg, thank you very much for taking time to talk with us. We've got to go, and we'll be watching what happens on Monday.
Thank you.
Good. Have a good weekend.
You too, Ira.
We're going to take a short break and come back and talk about inventing with the inventor of that that vacuum cleaner, that robotic vacuum cleaner, and its siblings. We'll talk about it. Stay with us.